Hi, and welcome to Communicating Climate Change, a podcast dedicated to helping you do exactly that. I'm Dickon, and I'll be your host as we dig deep into the best practices and the worst offences, always looking for ways to help you and me improve our abilities to engage, empower, and ultimately activate audiences on climate-related issues. This episode features a conversation with Alexei Ovchinnikov, Editor-in-Chief of the Ukraine War Environmental Consequences Workgroup. It was recorded in person in Tbilisi, Georgia, in August 2024, at the ENOST Conference for Climate Journalism. It's one of four episodes dedicated to issues complicating climate communication in Eastern Europe and the Caucasus region. Alexei is a Belarusian environmental activist, journalist, researcher, and member of Green Network, an environmental organization in exile. He was an author and co-editor of independent Belarusian environmental media outlet Green Belarus, as well as an author and co-editor of Ukrainian regional environmental protection platform EcoRayon. In September 2021, he left Belarus for political reasons, first living in Ukraine and now in Georgia. At the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Alexei started to analyze and report on the environmental consequences of the conflict. Today, he continues his environmental activities in exile, organizing local environmental meetings and workshops and advocating for international recognition of ecocide. Amongst other things, Alexei and I discussed climate propaganda, the need to perform due diligence when reporting on the environmental impacts of war, and the surprising solution stories coming out of Ukraine. Anyway, let's get on with it. This is Communicating Climate Change with Alexei Ovchinnikov. From your perspective, how can communication best contribute in humanity's response to the climate crisis?
Well, I think it's very important because I really worry about climate change and I'm really involved in environmental movement. And I realize it's the best solution just to create network and to create network between different activists, between different experts, and to be in contact, because actually I don't think that on governmental level we can find any solutions. But if we will unite, if we will communicate a lot, if we will create this network, it will help.
Much of your work has been reporting on the ecological fallout of the war in Ukraine. First of all, what are some of the headlines there? And second, how do you work to make these issues relevant against the backdrop of active war?
I think this war is very informative, and so people really heard a lot about what's happened in the Ukraine. We know about Kakhovka Dam blast, we know about Bayno Forest on Eastern Ukraine. People really know a lot about Ukraine, but I think when we talk about headlines, I don't think that people sometimes think that, for example, rebuilding of Ukraine can be much more crucial for the environment than the time of war. People don't talk a lot about green recovery of Ukraine, and I think it's very important right now. And also, people don't think that this Russian war influence on another countries like Georgia, Belarus, Moldova, Kyrgyzstan, because it's continuous for a long time. This war started not in 2022, it started in 2014, 2015. In Georgia, it started in 2008, yeah. We started our work in 2022, and our mission was just to share information about environmental consequences of the war in Ukraine for global audience. So we concentrated mostly on English-speaking audience, and I think right now it looks good because we have a lot of readers from Australia, USA, Ireland, England, and so on. And we're trying just to show people this is very important, and it is important from different cases. For example, I'm trying to talk a lot about ecocide, and I really don't know why it's still not an international crime. And I think the war in Ukraine can just push people to bring ecocide to this global agenda to start the first cases like international crime of ecocide. It's like one example. Yeah, and another one is Ukraine was an industrial country, and it completely destroyed eastern part of Ukraine. So the rebuilding of this country, if it will be in the green way, probably we have something like a hope that it will happen in other industrial countries. So we probably will find some solutions. We're trying to show that it's not just a problem of Ukraine. This Russian war, it's a global problem, and only together we can find solutions.
You mentioned a few incidents like the dam being destroyed and other things. For listeners who aren't aware of those
incidents? Could you just give a quick kind of overview so that we make sure everybody's on the same page?
I can tell a story about Kakhovka Dam blast. When it happened in June 2023, people thought that it's a really environmental catastrophe and it will influence negative on Black Sea, it will influence negative on the southern part of Ukraine. But later we realized, for example, that this Kakhovka Dam, it was built in the Soviet time. It was built in the time when nobody took care about nature. And when the reservoir was empty, so the rewilding of these territories of bottom of reservoir started very quick. And right now there is a big forest, very quick growing forest. And we're also trying to tell people that it's not necessary to rebuild Kakhovka hydropower plant right now, because we just can see very nice example how nature can recover itself, how forests can grow very quick. It's not so many people think about it. It's not a bad story, actually. We have bad and good news that all this problem experts thought that will happen. They didn't happen. So there is no problem with invasive species right now on the Kakhovka Reservoir Dam. So there are not process of desertification. Black Sea also didn't suffer so much as many people thought. But unfortunately, people sometimes really want to see bad news and they're more focused on the bad news. They say, oh no, I don't want to read about environmental consequences because yeah, it's a very complicated process of rewilding. It's a very complicated process how the nature adapts to the conflict. Right now we're thinking what people can do with eastern part of Ukraine because it's completely polluted, it's mined. It's not place for human and for living there, but maybe it can be like a place for rewilding, like Chernobyl zone. Yeah, it also can be like an option.
You said that you are making content in English and also trying to push that to international audiences to raise awareness of this issue. But do you also engage people on the ground? And if so, how do you do so when they may be focused on more immediate issues like survival and conflict-related news than on, say, long-term environmental issues?
Yeah, it's very complicated because in our region, people are very tired. Right now, they're in the time of war, so yeah, it's very complicated to talk about climate change. So we're trying to do our best. We're trying just to talk about it, don't forget about it, and bring people attention and just to show that, for example, when we talk about green recovery, it's more optimistic. It's not like something destroying of the country and the environment. So we're trying to bring some hope to the people and maybe involve them this way. Ukrainian people, for example, we work with Ukrainian organization and they continue their work in the time of war. For example, organizations like AK Action, they work with Just Transition. And it's very important because it's like the way how fossil fuel based cities and towns can develop if they will be involved in Just Transition process. And also other organizations like EcoClub Rivno, they also develop renewable energy in Ukraine. And we're trying to support them. We're trying to talk about them. For example, also we support such organizations like Razum We Stand. And as I mentioned in the beginning, I think it's like creation of networks. So together we can influence on people and we can involve people and just demonstrate them that it's important to think about climate change because they live in the time of war, but at the same time, they live in the time of climate change. This year, Ukraine suffered from heat waves. Belarus also suffered from heat waves. Georgia, for example, suffered from heavy rains and hail and destroyed agriculture. And yeah, if you just talk with people and show them that any way we should find the solutions, and probably this war is also the result of fossil fuel-based economy, they realize it more, and I think that they can find how to live, how to develop.
So you're connecting the dots for people.
We're trying to do it, yeah. I really think that it's very important just to be in this, in the creation of this network. It's like roots of plants, something like that. In forests, trees cannot survive alone, so they only can survive together. So and we're just creating the network of organizations. I think that we really need to mobilize everything right now because we live in a very hard time of climate change. And nature can adapt, but it's a problem how human societies can adapt to the climate change.
How Have you adapted your storytelling techniques to effectively communicate climate issues in a war zone? And if so, how?
Right now, it's complicated to write about conflicts because it's a war. So we have two sides. We have Ukrainian side and Russian side. And also, we should understand that both sides use environmental consequences for propaganda. And sometimes you need to choose one side. Sometimes you just want to verify information and tell people that it's not so bad. For example, it was with dolphins, because there are really a lot of dolphins dead, but they die all the time. So there was a huge number of dead dolphins, but it also were used just to bring attention to Ukraine. And we say it's very important to talk about Ukraine. It's very important to support Ukraine, but we should investigate the situation with ecosystem better. So we should understand what really happens there. My friend sometimes says that journalists should take a neutral position. I don't think that I'm really neutral because I really want to focus on climate change problems. I really support Ukraine, but I don't want to be a part of propaganda. When I write something, I focus on something. When I wrote an article about Kakhovka Dam, I focus on the problem of ecocide because I realize that it's very important. We just want to show different sides of conflict, what's happening. Right now, it's a part of our life. Probably it will be part of our life for coming years, but at the same time, we should find solution. We should find the way how to go on. It's very hard just to write about conflicts because anyway, you will be on one side. So I cannot be neutral. I stand with Ukraine. I will not write anything against Ukraine. Maybe somebody else can write about it. Yeah. There is a war. There is an full-scale invasion. And in this situation, yes, you should choose one side, I think.
Can you tell me more about the dolphins? How was this story co-opted and used as propaganda?
There was information received on social media that 1,000 dolphins die in the Black Sea. And we tried to investigate it, is it true or not? It was also like a way to bring attention to Ukraine that they die because of Russian submarines, Russian attack. But we also realized that it's important to investigate, is it true or not? And we talked with expert, and he showed that, Black Sea suffer from the war, but we also should understand that it suffer from other perspectives because of pollution from Krasnodar region, from development of Danube Channel. And if we will only focus on the war, we also can negatively influence on the Black Sea. We just started to write that a lot of dolphins die because of unsustainable fishery, because a lot of dolphins die in nets. And it's a very big problem. It doesn't mean that all dolphins die only because of submarine, but we should know that fishery in Black Sea is not controlled, and we should also to find solution how to control it. But from the position of Ukrainian perspective, it was very important just to bring attention to it. But I think that we should know the whole situation.
Are there stories where environmental issues directly impact people's immediate well-being, connecting to other concerns like food security, health, or the war effort itself?
Right now we're developing our social media and we're trying to see what people are really interested in. And I realize that, for example, food security is very important for people, and they're really afraid that war influences very negative on agriculture in Ukraine. So what people want to know about how the program for food security will be developed. And that's the way how we can ask experts and write article about it. And also pollution, air pollution and pollution of different war stuff. It's also the question for many people. So they want to know. After Kakhovka Dam, there were a lot of questions. Is it healthy to go to Black Sea to swim? So people, of course, they worry about their own life. And with this way, how we can try to also bring the attention to the problems I think are very important, like ecocide, problem of rebuilding, recovery of Ukraine, problem of different environmental issues. So just to understand that all this logistics, which were organized after the beginning of war, they're not so sustainable. And also the problem of fossil fuel, I think it's very important right now. I mentioned the initiative Razum We Stand, and in the beginning of the war, they started petitions for sanctions against Russia. And they also wrote that it's important just to find a way how European countries just be free from fossil fuel, because they should not just buy fossil fuel from Russia, but find another way how to be more energy efficient, how to be more free from fossil fuel. Yeah. But right now, last year, we see that the market of fossil fuels was just raised. People should know that it influences negative on the climate and on the human societies. Yeah.
And on the war effort, the last time I was in Berlin, there was a huge effort there to reduce energy consumption, to defund the Russian military, essentially.
Yes, of course. For me, actually, this war is very crucial, because I also realized from the perspective of climate policy, I see polarization. And for example, first COPs, Russia didn't show something like climate policy. But for example, this COP that will happen in Azerbaijan, for me, it looks like they really want to be involved and use actually climate agenda in their propaganda. Right now, you can see a lot of using of environmental climate agenda in Russian propaganda. You can just read right now that they say that nuclear plant can be bombed, destroyed, it will be something like catastrophe. But they didn't write a lot about the Khmelnytsky nuclear plant, which were attacked. And right now they're mostly trying to focus that this is war was organized by Western countries, but it's time of global South to race against the Western world. They're trying to use it.
Talked quite a bit about kind of solutions framing or looking differently at the catastrophe of war. How do you work to frame solution-centric stories in ways that celebrates them, yet avoids that sense of insincerity, maybe, when considering the broader, more alarming context of a war?
Well, I mentioned this story about ecocide. I'm really a big fan of Rights for Nature, because if ecocide will be declared in the international court, it help a lot of activists all over the world just to protect the nature. Another solution, as I said, it's green recovery of Ukraine, because I think there are very good projects, a lot of very good projects. I know that a lot of universities, a lot of companies were interested in green recovery, and so it also can bring technology to on the new level. How, for example, they can use renewable energy, how you can use energy efficiency buildings. Sometimes I think that these keys for Green Deal, they're in Ukraine, Belarus and Georgia, because these countries, maybe they're more ambitious just to be involved in European Union processes, and they're really interested to go there from green way. At the same time, I know that there are some oligarchs who are more interested in industrial development of the country, but a lot of activists and organizations, they're really interested in this green way. And I think it can bring some power to European Union.
I guess for many listeners who aren't kind of clued in on the war in Ukraine, it might be surprising to hear about rebuilding, about development of renewable energy. But as you said, these are stories you've written about, solutions stories on climate issues. Could you give some overview or insight into how those stories look? What is happening in Ukraine in terms of renewable energy development and the rebuild, even while the war is still going on?
So yeah, there are some good projects. For example, in Bucha, it's the suburban in Kyiv. There was a tragedy in Bucha in 2022 when a lot of people were killed and the suburban was completely destroyed. And right now the rebuilding process has started, and it will be more oriented on energy efficiency and renewable energy. Also, I know that actually there were many cooperatives for renewable energy in Ukraine, and they slowly right now develop and rebuild themselves. There is a big question how to recover agriculture in Ukraine, but I know there are also some projects which can be used because it's very complicated because territory is mined and polluted, but you need to find another solutions. Ukraine is agriculture country, and they will need a lot of fields for crops and something like that. I really think that this war started because a lot of companies which are based on fossil fuel market, they realize that it can be like the end of fossil fuel era. And so it created a lot of tension and conflict around the world. Because as I know, Russia really thought that when they started this full-scale invasion, that the European Union will not be ready just to cancel the addiction to Russian fossil fuel. And at the same time, they thought that this fossil fuel market, they can influence a lot on it. So nobody will support Ukraine. So it also means that a lot of countries right now think more about energy independence. And when we talk about fossil fuel, and actually when we talk about nuclear energy, we always talk about energy dependence, because there are some countries which have oil and coal, and some countries which have uranium, like Kyrgyzstan, for example, which is right now under big pressure from Russia. So Rosatom is really involved in the political organization, I think, in Kyrgyzstan. And when we talk about energy independence, I don't think that right now renewable energy is the best solution, but I hope that in 5-10 years we will find a solution how really make maybe not the countries, but maybe small towns more energy independent. And I hope that it will also stop the war, because right now we live in the era when we really dependent on the energy problems. And people understand in Ukraine very well, because sometimes they don't have energy. That's why I think it's how it's connected with conflict with the war.
What are the most pressing climate issues that you believe will need attention after the conflict subsides?
A lot of people left Ukraine, so they talk about something like 5 million, I think, and a lot of people don't want to return to the country. At the same time, of course, if they will return, they probably will return to Kyiv, Lviv, and western part of Ukraine, and nobody wants to go to eastern part because it's a horrific territories. So, because front lines stay there for a long time, so it's polluted mines and full of tragedy. I think it can be like the biggest problem, because right now the Ukrainian government and Ukrainian organization, they should more influence on people to continue work after the end of the war to rebuild the country. I would like to go to Ukraine after the end of the war just to be a part of this process. If some volunteers and people from European Union will come, it will be much more safer at the time, but it will be a very important process. Because if it will go in the industrial way, we will have a bigger problem with the environmental than we have right now.
And then there are obviously areas like the Black Sea, which affect more than just the country itself, but also the whole region.
They can be very negative in this. It will be rebuilt in industrial way, because right now there is a big problem, because we don't know what happened on occupied territories. We just can investigate, but only collect some satellite data and some data which can be collected in Romania, for example, or Georgia. But what really happens on occupied territories, nobody knows.
What's the single most important aspect of communication that we should be paying attention to in our communication endeavors?
When I started to be an environmental journalist, I just realized one day that it's the most important topic. It doesn't mean that I was born like an environmental journalist. I tried myself in different other areas. All this time, I just tried to walk the way, it maybe sounds a little bit pathetic, but the way of my heart, what I really think, what I really feel, to be critical at the same time. So I don't think that I'm like part of any propaganda. If I feel something's very important right now, so I'm trying to write about it and trying to talk about it. You choose by, I think, mostly by your heart. I think that's my opinion.
What's the biggest mistake that you see communicators make when attempting to engage the public on climate change issues?
Right now, it's better to write stories. I really don't think that people should know a lot about NDC, GPC, and all these abbreviatures. So, because sometimes climate journalists, they get involved in these climate policy questions, but they don't tell stories of people. But I think that it's more important right now to show how people can try to find solutions, how they try to adapt to climate change. Because I really believe that this solution we can find only on grassroots level. I don't think that government really can help us in this situation, because from COVID time, sometimes it seems that they don't know what to do. Right now, probably they also don't know what to do. But people can find solutions because it's their life. I saw it in Belarus, because during the protests, people really helped each other. I see it in Georgia, I see it in different countries, because people really try and want to help each other. They really want to find solutions. And they don't do it in more sophisticated, very hard understandable way, like big policy papers and strategies and plans and something like that, because I don't think that it can help.
People power.
People power, yeah.
I had a brilliant time talking with Alexei, but what in particular stuck with you from our conversation? What will you take from it and apply to your own work? For me, first and foremost, it was Alexei's dedication to the truth, where many other people might simply lean into any message that could be used to support their side, Alexei remained steadfast in his search for the facts. There's a lot to be said for that kind of integrity. Beyond that, it's his ability to find those silver linings, to uncover success stories from amongst the horrors of the Russian invasion. As he said himself, people are more focused on the bad news, yet here he is finding sometimes surprising, curious wins and shedding light on them. A persistent drumbeat of ecological resilience. That's a bit of a superpower, I think. So that's what I'll be taking with me. But how about you? What did you hear? What will you be incorporating into your communications endeavors? Thanks to Alexei Ovchinnikov for sharing his time and insight with the show. It was great. You can find links to some relevant resources in the show notes. Thanks also to you for listening to Communicating Climate Change. If you enjoyed this episode, why not leave it a rating or a review? Your feedback not only helps to shine a light on the guests and themes that resonate with you the most, but also boost visibility, meaning the series reaches more people, expanding the community, and driving the conversation forward. You can find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, or by subscribing, so you never miss out. You can find Communicating Climate Change on LinkedIn too, and if you think the series would be of interest to friends or colleagues, why not point them in the right direction? Remember, each and every episode attempts to add to our toolkits to help us develop the passion and the integrity that we'll need for this sometimes daunting task. So be sure to stay tuned for more. For anything else, just head over to communicatingclimatechange.com. Until next time, take care.